President Trump will take this opportunity to attack China for its role in the origins of COVID.
World leaders prepare to gather virtually. It's Monday, September 21st. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us as well online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, a popular and iconic U.S. Supreme Court justice has died. Americans want peace in Afghanistan. Schools open online. Extraterrestrial life may be closer than thought. It's all on today's VOA Asia. World leaders will virtually convene this week at the United Nations General Assembly. With more than 30 million confirmed cases of COVID-19 worldwide, the virus is certain to top their agenda. VOA's Margaret Bashir has a preview.
The usual crowds at the annual United Nations General Assembly will not be there this year. World leaders will not be present in New York due to the pandemic. Instead, they will send pre-recorded video messages. Many will likely focus on the economic and health crises caused by the coronavirus.
The COVID-19 pandemic is a crisis unlike any in our lifetime. And so this year's General Assembly session will be unlike any other too. We have a full program, and the stakes could not be higher.
As scientists work on a vaccine, leaders will hold a virtual session on September 30th to discuss ways to speed up the development of a safe and effective vaccine that can be accessible to people around the world. They will also focus on the importance of an economic recovery that addresses global inequalities, is sustainable, and mitigates climate change.
The world is burning, and recovery is our chance to get on track and tame the flame.
Unlike person-to-person meetings in years past, the virtual nature of this year's sessions has resulted in the largest turnout of presidents, prime ministers, and royals, with more than 170 sending in video statements. The UN will be practicing stringent COVID-19 protocols. Only one delegate from each country will be allowed in the General Assembly Hall during the annual debate. President Donald Trump is scheduled to give one of the most anticipated video speeches. Analysts expect Trump to focus on his domestic achievements and ratchet up his rhetoric against China.
I think that President Trump will take this opportunity to attack China for its role in the origins of COVID, and also blame the WHO for failing to contain the disease.
Trump may also take aim at Iran, claiming that Washington has triggered the snapback of all UN sanctions on Tehran, a view not shared by many other member states. There will also be virtual side meetings on the conflict in Libya and support for Lebanon in the aftermath of the August 4th explosion at Beirut port. This year marks the UN's 75th anniversary. An observance will be held on Monday, but celebrations are muted as the organization focuses on tackling the coronavirus pandemic. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, New York.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. China unveils rules on umbrella entities after Washington's TikTok ban. Death of Tibetan commando offers insight into little-known elite Indian force. Taliban want Islamic system of government as focal point of Afghan talks. Afghan media fear losing freedom in Taliban peace talks. Australia to allow more citizens stranded by COVID-19 border controls to return. You'll find more on these stories, photos, video, and text, all on Facebook at VOA Asia and the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the second woman to serve on the nation's highest court, has died at age 87 in Washington. Ginsburg entered the legal profession at a time when there were few women lawyers. She spent her career working to expand women's equality and came to have near rock star status in progressive circles. VOA's Julie Tabo shares more.
I, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, do solemnly swear.
On August 10, 1993, Ruth Bader Ginsburg became the second woman in U.S. history to become a justice of the United States Supreme Court. Ginsburg knew she wanted to be a lawyer by her third year in college.
That's the same thing that the communist party is doing.
She was motivated by the Red Scare that gripped the nation in the 1950s when Americans were afraid of the perceived threat posed by the Soviet Union. Led by Senator Joseph McCarthy, thousands of people were publicly accused of being communists.
There were brave lawyers who were standing up for those people and reminding our Senate, look at the Constitution. Look at the very First Amendment. What does it say? If lawyers can be helping us get back in touch with our most basic values, that's what I want to be.
Ginsburg's parents discouraged her from studying law, fearful that she would not be able to find a job in the male-dominated profession. But Ginsburg was determined, and after graduating from Cornell University in 1954, she was accepted to Harvard Law School just 5 years after they started admitting women.
When I entered law school, the class numbered over 500. 9 of us were women.
2 years later, Ginsburg's husband, Martin Ginsburg, a renowned tax attorney and law professor, took a job in New York City, and Ginsburg transferred to Columbia University. She graduated from Columbia Law School in 1959, and, as her parents had predicted, she found breaking into a man's world challenging.
There wasn't a single firm in the entire city of New York that was willing to take a chance on me.
But with the help of a sympathetic professor, she got a clerkship. Soon after, she started teaching at Rutgers University School of Law and Columbia Law School. In 1972, Ginsburg founded the Women's Rights Project to work for equality for women and girls in all spheres of life.
At that time, there were many, many laws on the books that gave preference to men simply based on their being men.
Lenora Lapidus is director of the project, an initiative of the American Civil Liberties Union.
Throughout the 1970s, as she led the Women's Rights Project, she brought case after case to the Supreme Court in order to establish that the Constitution prohibited sex discrimination.
2 decades later, Ruth Bader Ginsburg was a member of that court, appointed in 1993 by President Bill Clinton. During her time at the Supreme Court, she was an articulate voice for the liberal wing of the bench. Ginsburg believed that gender barriers facing women in the workplace today have all but disappeared in the United States. What remains, she said, is something a court cannot mandate: for American society to be open to the idea that women and men need a balance between work and family. Ginsburg balanced her own life as a working mother of 2 children with the love and support of her husband, Martin, who passed away in 2010.
Well, the most important thing by far was that I had a life partner, my husband, who thought my work was at least as important as his, and who wanted very much to be part of his children's growing up years.
Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg says she has always tried to do what she believes is right.
I hope that I will be remembered as someone who loves the law, loves her country, loves humanity, prizes the dignity of every individual, and works as hard as she can with whatever talent she has to make the world a little better than it was when I entered it.
Julie Tabo, VOA News, Washington.
Happening now in Asia, openly challenging the monarchy of Thailand's king, thousands of protesters marched in Bangkok Sunday to present demands that include a call for reforms to curb his powers. Protesters have grown ever bolder during 2 months of demonstrations against Thailand's palace and military-dominated establishment. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us as we start a new week on VOA Asia.
A recent survey by the nonprofit Eurasia Group Foundation has found strong public support among Republican and Democratic voters for Trump administration-backed peace talks to end the 19-year-old U.S. war in Afghanistan. VOA's diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain tells us more from Washington.
The United States and its NATO allies launched military operations in Afghanistan days after the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks. Nearly two decades and an estimated 160,000 deaths later, many Americans say they have lost patience with the war and want to see all U.S. troops come home. A recent Eurasia Group Foundation survey found that most Americans from both major political parties support the intra-Afghan peace talks backed by the Trump administration, which were launched in Doha on September 12th.
What we found is support for the peace talks that are being led by Zalmay Khalilzad are generally supported both by Trump supporters, 63% of Trump supporters, as well as 61% of Biden supporters.
At the start of the talks, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said the U.S. military is on track to withdraw all troops from Afghanistan by the spring of 2021. The United States has reduced its forces there to around 8,600 since signing the deal with the Taliban in February. The Eurasia Group Foundation poll found that since last year, those who believe the U.S. should stay in Afghanistan until all enemies are defeated has dropped by half, from 30% to 15%. Among those surveyed, younger Americans are fatigued with what many see as endless wars, favoring diplomacy over military deployments. Approving of a U.S. president directly engaging with adversaries, and calling for greater global engagement.
If there is a new administration or a second term of the Trump administration, the idea that we would sit down with our adversaries largely gets support. Americans want the United States to rejoin different agreements, whether it's the World Health Organization, the Paris Climate Accords, the JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal. 70% supported rejoining agreements like that.
Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden says he supports the Afghan withdrawal plan, but wants the Pentagon to leave a small military force there to counter any threat of terrorism in post-war Afghanistan. Cindy Sain, VOA News, Washington.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. Taiwan bid farewell Saturday to late President Lee Teng-hui, dubbed Mr. Democracy, for ending autocratic rule in favor of free elections and championing Taiwan's separate identity from China. Lee's memorial service took place in the shadow of Chinese war games, as did his election as Taiwan's first democratic leader in 1996. You'll find more on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Across America, a new school year has begun, and for many, that means remote online instruction every day. Deanna Mitchell checks in on how students and parents are coping with education in the COVID era.
For many, schooling via computer has meant internet crashes and bad connections. On the first day of school, most students in the largest district in Texas, the Houston Independent School District, couldn't log in to It's Learning, a remote educational management system that utilizes Microsoft Office tools.
And teachers and students were very frustrated because they could not access their classes. Of course, you know, teachers' cell phones, emails, school phones, of course, were on blast because everybody was trying to call them saying, we cannot access, you know, our classes.
By the end of the week, many problems had been resolved. But students around the country are experiencing a bumpy ride with remote learning, often leading to frustration. Azucena Itule Ramos is entering her junior year in high school in Berkeley, California, a critical year for college-bound students. She hopes to attend prestigious Brown University, and she feels the pressure to perform well, even during a pandemic. She is learning via the video meeting app, Zoom, 3 hours every morning, followed by hours of homework.
A lot of the times my eyes hurt at the end of the day, especially with my biology class, which is going twice as fast. I'm having to do 6 hours of homework after school by myself.
One of her teachers struggles with technical problems.
Not being able to get to the Zoom and she not knowing how to fix that, or like the password not working, and then you're locked out of the class. And she's always like, oh, I don't know what to tell you, it's still due. But I'm like, I don't know what to do if it's not working.
Remote learning isn't exactly new. Some Americans learned to paint from a 1980s television show featuring artist Bob Ross. Millennials grew up learning from YouTube. But teaching remotely to an entire class presents unique challenges that only a limited number of institutions have fully overcome. Salman Khan started Khan Academy in 2004, an online education website that features courses in a wide variety of subjects in more than 40 languages, all free. Today, Khan Academy has more than 100 million users worldwide, from preschoolers to college students.
Districts are trying to transplant what they were doing in the physical realm and putting it straight onto video conference. And it's a start, but I think we're almost erring on the side of too much now. Teachers are feeling overwhelmed because they have to do everything they were doing before, but now they have this added dimension of how do I virtualize it.
Khan Academy has resource guides for teachers on how better to teach online and keep students engaged.
You know, the catastrophic situation is 20-30% of kids just get disengaged, and not only do they not learn, they atrophy and they just disengage from learning generally. Teachers and schools, where possible, should be able to architect fun things. If the kids don't feel emotionally and mentally supported right now, the academics are going to be that much harder.
To make the most of online learning, he says, take frequent breaks. When sites crash, step away. And as is often required during a pandemic, take a deep breath. Dina Mitchell for VOA News, Oakland, California.
There is no current evidence that dogs can be infected. Hand washing after contact with all animals is recommended. This protects against other bacteria, such as E. coli and Salmonella, that can pass between animals and humans. For more information, visit www.who.int or www.cdc.gov.
Now on VOA Asia, researchers on a quest to find life in the universe got some promising news. Space agencies are joining forces to defend the planet from an aggressive asteroid and one of the best places on Earth to view the stars. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has the week in space.
Good news this week for explorers seeking extraterrestrial life. Scientists say they have detected a gas called phosphine swirling in the highly acidic clouds of Venus. But the European Southern Observatory's Itziar de Gregorio says it is probably too soon to say life exists on the planet.
This doesn't mean that we discovered extraterrestrial life on Venus. Far from it. It is possible that we are unaware of a chemical that produces this phosphine, and we have to investigate in that direction.
The quest to study Venus began in 1960 with the Pioneer 5 space probe. But with this week's development, there's heightened interest in the planet. On Earth, bacteria thriving in oxygen-starved environments like sewers and intestines produce the gas phosphine. The discovery on Venus is raising speculation that microbial life exists there, but De Gregorio adds that the phosphine source could simply be something researchers have yet to study. In other news that could be ripped from the pages of a science fiction novel, NASA and the European Space Agency, or ESA, joined forces this week to build a spacecraft to deflect an Earth-bound asteroid.
This mission is essentially a demonstration so we can understand how these technologies could be used. It's like billiards. A small force hits the asteroid that is heading for Earth, which should create an aversion, and we want to practice this so that we are ready if an asteroid is actually heading for us.
NASA is set to launch a craft in June 2021 on a collision course with the asteroid to attempt altering its flight path. If the mission succeeds, the ESA will launch a follow-up in 2024.
In other news, images from space showed the vast and ancient ice sheet atop Greenland shed a 113 square kilometer chunk of ice last month.
The new research is yet another important piece of evidence showing that it's really time we stop hitting the snooze button and wake up to the climate emergency. We need to curb climate emissions right now, immediately. And we need to create a network of ocean sanctuaries covering at least a third of the blue planet if we are to take climate crisis seriously.
Dr. Laura Meller from Greenpeace says the time to act is now. As more ice melts, experts say more dark water appears in its place, absorbing heat, further accelerating the process of melting ice and rising seas. And finally, UNESCO certifies Italy's St. Bartholomew Valley as a starlight stellar park, meaning it's one of the best places on Earth to look up at the sky. The northern Italian municipality takes its designation seriously, having recently replaced lampposts with special LEDs that do not shine up. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
Nearly 2 years ago, as the late Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg recovered from surgery for early-stage lung cancer, two new films at the time paid tribute to her life and many accomplishments. VOA's Penelope Palou reports on how the senior justice of the court's liberal wing was being portrayed on film.
178 laws that differentiate on the basis of sex.
Women can't work overtime.
We have to get credit cards in our husband's name.
We're not allowed to work in mine.
Something is
this is the film on the basis of sex follows the challenges Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg faced in a man's world, starting with her first year as a law student at Harvard in 1954.
Welcome to Harvard Law School.
Ladies, let's go around the table and report who you are and why you're occupying a place that could have gone to a man.
The film also looks into her private life as a mother and a wife. At some point, she was supporting her convalescent husband, who had suffered testicular cancer, by attending both her classes and his at Harvard. Daniel Stiepelman, the film's screenwriter and Justice Ginsburg's nephew, told VOA that apart from Ruth Bader Ginsburg's legal acumen and her inroads to women's rights, he wanted to share his firsthand experience of Justice Ginsburg's equal partnership with her husband, renowned tax law attorney Martin Ginsburg.
You've been ready for this your whole life, so go in there and let the judges see the Ruth Ginsburg I know.
Felicity Jones plays Justice Ginsburg, a role she found, to say the least, challenging.
It was nerve-wracking at first. You know, you don't enter into that lightly. So it was about becoming her in every single way and doing justice to her story.
The documentary RBG chronicles Justice Ginsburg's life from birth to her immigrant Jewish family in Brooklyn, New York, to her fights and legal victories for gender equality before the Supreme Court. That led to her appointment to the U.S. Supreme Court in 1993 by President Bill Clinton, and then her rise as a pop culture icon after publications and websites coined her as Notorious RBG.
Every time Justice Ginsburg wrote a dissent, the internet would explode.
Do you mind signing this copy?
I am 84 years old and everyone wants to take a picture with me.
Sue Cassidy has dedicated a box to her as part of the company's Phenomenal Women chocolate line.
She has her own box and we can't keep them in stock. They are just selling like crazy.
A year after the death of her husband, Justice Ginsburg spoke with VOA's Julie Tabo about her legacy.
I hope that I will be remembered as someone who loves the law, loves her country, loves humanity, prizes the dignity of every individual.
Justice Ginsburg has spoken highly of both films depicting her. Filmmaker Mimi Letter says that the justice offered advice on the film on the basis of sex and fact-checked it.
She saw the film and she gave me a hug and a kiss, and that alone was incredible.
The word woman does not appear even once in the U.S. Constitution.
Nor does the word freedom, Your Honor.
Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, all at VOA Asia. Find our full-length programs at voanews.com. thanks so much for being with us today. And we thank those who helped bring the program to you. Our managing editor, Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a super day ahead. Be safe. Be well.